The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, to be broadcast on July 26, 2023, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, and we should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below. Or if you're listening to this on an audio file podcast, you can just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Let's see here. We are playing, recording our shows now on Mondays, and we are playing at our normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at WHUS 91.7 FM. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, and Spotify. Ron's rant of the week. Okay, here it comes. It's over. The Tour de France is over. I'm depressed. This is the time when you go into that little depression thing and the withdrawal thing. So it's a withdrawal alert time, folks. For those of you who have been tuning into the Tour de France and have enjoyed the exciting year that we've had this year, which it has certainly been all of that. It's over. But there's some good news, and I'll get to that on the positive side. There is some good news. And are drivers getting worse? I got a little clip here that I'd love to go over with you guys, and we can take a look at that and see what that looks like. I know what my opinion is. Let's put it that way. And let's go on a positive side. Okay? But wait, it's the Tour de Femme, or as Fran likes to call it, the Tour de Girl. Yeah, she does call it the Tour de Girl. It's kind of funny. Anyway, and let's see, on another positive side here, we've got three cheers for the Thread City Cyclers Quiet Corner Bicycle Tour. We had a nice turnout yesterday. We're both a little tired right now because we worked it. We worked the event. We traveled around. Fran was kind of in charge of all of the rest stops and coordinating everything. And so we had quite a pile of jugs and coolers and all sorts of fun stuff in our yard. And anyway, it had a good turnout. A lot of people came to it. Looks like it's a go for future years, because this was kind of a test year for us.
Right, because it wasn't going so well.
No, and I can't hear you if you're all the way over there on the microphone. Thank you.
And we had a goal of We had a goal of having over 100 people sign up this year, and we've never had this many.
It's a good turnout.
We had 140.
Yeah, it was a very good turnout.
That means we have to do it next year.
We really appreciate everyone who came to it. Apparently, oddly enough, we got a lot of feedback from Facebook.
We did?
Yeah, feedback came from Facebook, and also I got a number of comments of people that came up to me and said, "Well, I heard you talk about it on your show, so here I am," which is really cool. Which includes another positive side. Big shout out to David Chiappetta, who came all the way down from Lewiston, Maine, to come ride on the steeplechase. Thread City Cycles Quiet Corner Bicycle Tour. Sorry, we have a lot of events going on right now, so it's all in my brain, and whatever comes out, it's what it is. So anyway, three cheers for the Thread City Cyclers Quiet Corner Bike Tour. It was good. It was fun day. Great weather too. Oh my god, we're finally having great weather. The humidity has dropped. The The air quality is really good. We're not having any fires in Canada that are coming in our direction. I don't know if there's still... Are there still fires in Canada, friend?
I can check if you...
I'm not really sure what's going on up there. I do know that the air has been very, very good. The air quality is super good. I rode into the community center this morning, and it was beautiful. It was just a beautiful morning. It was just very nice. Only saw one deer this morning. And let's see. Oh, here's the last of the positive side. Here you go, Franny. It's a boy.
Oh, Wout Van Aert.
Wout Van Aert. Yes, siree. Wout Van Aert is now the proud father of two boys. And
aww,
we'll get to that
nice.
A little bit more in the show here, too. So, Mechanical Minute and Cycling Tips. It always comes out of one of these bike tours or organized rides that I'm involved with. Putting your chain back on without ruining your bike, your chain, or your clothing, not to mention the embarrassment of the Cat 5 tattoo. Yeah, that's going to be my mechanical moment. So, how to put on a bike chain in 4 easy steps. Yeah, it can be done, you know. It's kind of can be a really, really, really messy project. So, I thought maybe this would be a good time to go over this and kind of take a look at what we could do here to help you put your chain back on. Seems like everybody drops their chain. It seems like a kind of a common thing that happens. Is it a common thing because your bike's not adjusted correctly? Is it a common thing because maybe you're in the wrong position on the bike when you're, you know, in other words, maybe you're in what they call a cross chain position? I think a lot of these new bikes, especially the, I will say probably more the electronic ones than anything else, they are, there it's really easy to shift the bike in a gear that you probably shouldn't be in. And what I mean by that is if you are in the lowest or easiest gear in the back and you're in the highest or hardest gear in the front, that is typically known as a cross chain position. And what it is you're asking the chain to communicate to the two gears from two very, very far away places. And the problem with that is when you go to move the front derailleur to maybe take that chain off of the large chain ring and drop it down to the small chain ring, there's a very good chance it's going to go beyond the small chain ring. No matter how well adjusted your bike is, it can happen.
Do you want to know about the fires?
So, put that thought on hold, and we'll come back to it.
Sure.
And if you don't mind, I'm going to keep going here on the chain situation. So, that's one of the reasons why your chain might be falling off. The other cross chain position is the inner small chain ring in the front, and the in the back in your hardest pedaling gear or your smallest little cog in the back. And again, that's a cross chain position, and it puts a lot of undue wear and stretch on the chain also and on the drivetrain itself. So you should probably try to avoid those things if you can. I know sometimes you're just too overly drawn into your category 6 training paced group ride. What did I say there? I don't know. But, you know, we get these highly competitive types. And you get to a point where you just can't, you know, you can't think about what gear you're in because you're trying so hard to keep up to or impress all the others on your ride. Whatever. Just pay attention to your bike. You know, ride your bike, pay attention to your bike, love your bike, hug your bike, clean your bike. Kiss your bike. That's good. It's all good. It's all good. Good, good, good. Your bike is by far the best thing that you have in your house right now, I would say. Although there is Fran. So I guess I should be careful with this statement. But she loves her bikes too.
I do.
It's not
a lot of fun right now.
It's not like she doesn't love her bikes too. So you know, we are a bike friendly home. We definitely are.
I'm definitely a believer in N+1.
Yes, N+1 is definitely a good thing to live by. So you know, there's those are the big reasons why your bike chain falls off. But they have we're going to talk about how to put the chain back on. But let me give you a couple more reasons. So you're pushing down really, really hard on the pedals. All right. And you're putting out the big work. You are, you're climbing like a European pro, right? And you're going super hard, but you're in the big chain ring. And then you realize that, oh God, I cannot push this gear anymore. I really need a lower gear. And you're kind of exhausting your supply of gears in the back, so you decide to drop it down to the small chain ring, so you'll be able to spin the pedals a little, to spin your pedals a little faster, so you can keep that nice quick cadence that you should be using when you're climbing the hill. And when you go to shift down, this is the classic mistake. You've got so much torque and pressure on those pedals that you're just asking for trouble. The derailleurs are pretty good now. They do a pretty good job of dropping that chain down. But if you've got a lot of pressure on that pedal, you're asking for trouble. In either direction, I'm going to tell you that too, either going up or going down. You really, when you're going to shift your bike into one chain ring or the other in the front, you should have a very light, soft pedal on your pedals. What I mean by soft pedal, I mean not a lot of torque at all.
And shouldn't you
let it ease up very nicely?
Shouldn't you be in the middle gears in the front too?
And it helps to be in. It helps to not be in the cross chain position, which we went over earlier. Yeah, the cross chain position is a no-no.
Right.
And when you try to shift from one ring to the other ring and you're in the cross chain, you're asking for your chain to fall off.
If I'm realizing, if I'm in the big ring and then I'm in the, and I realize that I really shouldn't be in the big ring because I'm in the big gear in the back, so I'm cross chained. Before I shift to the smaller ring, I actually shift up.
Right.
In the front.
That's exactly the way you should do it.
So I'm less like a cross chain.
Yep.
But people aren't thinking about it, and they...
No, because people are overly aggressive and competitive on their bicycles for some reason.
Yeah.
And when they do that, that's when the mistakes happen.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. You know, you're not a European pro. Well, maybe you are. I'll tell you, if there are European pros that are listening to Bicycle Talk, I am completely flabbergasted by that one. I doubt very much they are.
I don't think I've ever ridden with a European pro.
Or even an American pro. It doesn't really matter. I mean, if you're a professional bicycle racer, then, I've ridden with professional bicycle racers. And if you're a professional bicycle racer and you're in the heat of the moment and, you're gonna abuse the daylights out of that bike, I'm sure, and frustrate your mechanic staff too, because they hate it when you break their bikes. But anyway, it can happen. It can happen. But otherwise, life's too short. Just be nice to your bike. Be nice to your bike. So, those are your general reasons why your chain falls off. It's almost always, let it be known, almost always operator error. If the bike is tuned well and is working really good, you brought it to your local bike shop and they did a bang up job on it and really cleaned it up nicely, and they've got that thing shifting crisp and clean and beautiful, you shouldn't be dropping chains. If you are dropping chains after having all of that work done and after it working flawlessly, then it's probably operator error. So we're going to call it operator error. It happens. Chain falls off. The other thing is, you could be taking your bike out of the back of the car. This is a classic. People take the bike out of the back of the car, and when they do, they sort of backpedal the crank set as they're pulling the bike out, and a chain falls off. And it happens. So what to do and what not to do to get that chain back on? Because this is what we're talking about today. We're going to talk about a lot of other things too, but here we go. Number one, try to get the chain back on while you're riding. Okay, here's your situation. You're riding down the road, chain drops, and you go, oh no. Now, if the chain drops and you're going up a steep climb, you're kind of out of luck. All right, you're really, really going to have a hard time getting that back on, because the reason the chain dropped on the sharp steep climb is because you waited too long to shift, and you shifted down under a lot of pressure, and that dropped your chain, and that's common. So you're sort of stuck there. But sometimes you have the wherewithal to actually think about shifting down to that small chain ring before it starts getting steep, and you soft pedal, but you didn't soft pedal enough and the chain falls off. So how do you get it back on? Well, here's the thing. If you continue a really soft pedal and then try to shift it back up onto the large chain ring, oftentimes you can get it to come back up. It doesn't happen all the time, but most of the time I have taken a derailed chain while riding the bike, or talked someone into, while riding the bike, re-railing their derailed chain. Just simply by doing a real soft pedal, that's the key point. No hard crushing, oh, I gotta get this back on here really quick. None of that. You gotta be patient. You got to be really calm about it and soft pedal it, and it'll just rise back up onto the gear, and then you're all set. And then you can shift it back down again with that soft pedal where it's supposed to be, and you don't have to get off the bike. You don't have to get your hands all messy, and you don't have to do the nasty thing, which a lot of people do, and that is they don't soft pedal, and then they jam the chain between the frame and the inside chain ring. And now we're going down a road that you shouldn't go down. But anyway, you can soft pedal it back on. I've done it a bunch of times. I've seen it done a bunch of times. You got to, while you're pedaling, you shift your front derailleur into the position of the biggest chain ring or your hardest gear. And with a bit of luck, the derailleur will drag the chain just enough to catch the teeth of the chain ring, and it should pull itself back in place as you're pedaling. So that's it. Number two, check whether the chain is trapped against the frame. There's two places the chain can get trapped against the frame. It can get trapped up front, and it can get trapped in the back. So you gotta get off the bike if it's there. You just got to get off the bike, because you're gonna make a mess. If you're riding on a carbon fiber frame, you could score the carbon fiber. No. If you're riding on an aluminum frame, you could score the aluminum. No. If you're riding on a titanium frame, you could score the titanium. All those lead to fatigue issues in the future and failures of the frame. If you're riding on a steel frame, you're just going to scratch the paint off. Why don't we all ride steel frames still? Well, some of us do. Anyway, although I have been on my plastic bike the last couple of weeks, I will admit. So I made a comment the other day about riding my plastic bike, and a person looked at me and said, "It's carbon fiber, Ron." I said, "Yeah, well, it's plastic. You know, it's kind of resin and fiber. Put it together and you have a frame, and that's what it is." So I joke about it, and they thought it was silly. But anyway, so if it gets trapped in there, you got a problem. If it's trapped in the back, your problem is a lot less than when it's trapped in the front. It's trapped in the back between the hardest pedaling cog or the really tiny cog in the back, then you simply release the rear wheel. And when you release the rear wheel, and if you have something simple like an old quick release rear wheel, not like something with the disc brakes and through axles and don't even get me started, I'll get angry, then you just loosen the wheel, and now you've got the tension off of the jam chain, and you can pick it up and put it in there. I highly recommend a pair of gloves on this if you don't want to end up looking like the chain when you get done, or using a rag of some sort to lift the chain up and on. If it's off the front, the chain has fallen off and it's up in the front and it's jammed between the frame, careful. You want to be so careful at getting it out of that jam position. Sometimes it really gets jammed in there. The right way to do it is not pleasant, because you really need a mechanic. You need to, you know, pull the left hand crank arm off of the bike. You need to slide the right hand crank arm out so you can get it out there without doing any permanent damage to your frame. I can get them out. I've gotten them out before, but you do have to be super, super careful, you know, because you're out on a ride and you're, you know, 20 miles from home, and one of your riders drops a chain and they get it all jammed in there because they tried to pedal it on and they did it the wrong way. And, you know, what are you going to do? You got to get them home. So it sometimes gets a little tricky. But the key I find is that I actually grab it and kind of twist the chain a little bit as I'm sliding in. And usually if it went in there, it'll come out of there. But you do have to be super careful about not scoring the frame. You need wiggle room in there if you can do it. So, yeah. And then the other thing, that you can push the rear derailleur forward. So when you push the rear derailleur forward, you put a lot of slack on the chain, and that helps you get the chain out from where it is stuck up front, or it'll also help you be able to pick the chain up from the bottom and put it back up onto the cog in the front that it fell off of. Little tricks, but you're gonna get covered in greasy, messy, oily chain stuff, and you know that just happens. But anyway, lifting the chain back up in place, sometimes you can do that, but make sure that you have put the front derailleur into the low gear position, into the small chain ring position, if you're going to lift it up. Because if it's up in the big gear position and you try to lift it up, you're just not gonna be able to get it through there. So drop it back down. Think sensibly about this, okay? Take a look at the mechanism and how it works, and you should be okay. That's kind of how you do it. So if you follow any of those steps, you should be able to put your chain back on, and that'll be good. And I saw some poor gentleman who was fighting with his bike the other day, trying to get his chain back on, and I looked, I could see it from a distance, and I said, "Stop!" and he looked at me, and I said, "Don't touch it. I got it. And I went over, and I had a rag with me, and I just kind of went and I pushed the front rear derailleur forward and lifted it up, and I did exactly what I just said, and it just went right in place. And he goes, "Wow," he goes, "you make that look really easy." And I said, "It is really easy. You just need to think about it before you do it." And so he thanked me very much and got him back on the road, and he was ready to go. But, you know, it happens. That's kind of a fun thing when you're working these events and you're a bike mechanic. It's either really fun or really challenging at times to see the things that come your way and the way that people treat their bikes. And I'm going to say that most people don't treat their bikes as nicely as they should. Did I talk about loving your bike and kissing your bike earlier? I think I did.
I tell you anyway, when the least little thing is wrong with my bike.
Fran, on the other hand, tells me when the least little thing is wrong with her bike.
You told me to.
Yeah, I know.
Very early in our relationship.
I know. Well, it's better than the other way, in which case it's like, "What did you do that for?" You know, that sort of thing. You don't want to go there. Anyway. That chain. Anyway, that's it. That's all I got on that one. This is going away. All right, so let's go back here and see what else we got. We're going into the show now. Let's start with the finish of the Tour de France. If you haven't seen the finish of the Tour de France yet, you need to shut the program off, go watch it, and then come back and listen to the rest. What a week since last week. Last week, when we were broadcasting last week, it was last Monday, it was a rest day, and we were looking at trying to rest ourselves because of all the action that was happening. And it was very tiring watching the tour this year. Very, very tiring. And what did we have? 10 seconds of difference between rider number one and rider number two. And that is a really, really, really close Tour de France. That's pretty amazing stuff. We're going into the time trial the following day. That was last Tuesday. And the time trial was a short time trial. My prediction was there wasn't going to be much change. A lot of people were predicting there's not going to be much change. It was only a 22-kilometer time trial, which 22 kilometers is very short. It's 13-mile time trial. And not a lot can go wrong in 13 miles. And usually, you know, you might lose a second or two. You might lose maybe 10 seconds, or you might gain 10 seconds. But not a lot is going to go wrong in 13 miles, unless it does. And what happened? I'll tell you what happened. Tadej Pogačar looked tired. He looked just really tired. His body language wasn't right. He was sitting up too much. He just looked tired. And albeit he should be tired, think about it. The guy crashed really, really hard 6 weeks before the tour. He broke his wrist at a couple of places. He was wearing a cast. He was training on a set of rollers for the Tour de France. And he was not getting in the miles and the race experience miles that he needed to get in before the tour. I think he raced in the Tour of Slovenia. I'm not even sure if that was. It wasn't very much racing. He was racing with a cast on his wrist. And he's one of the best riders in the tour. And he's going back and he's going to do the Tour de France. He's determined he's going to do it. And I don't think they even gave him the go-ahead until maybe a couple of weeks before. And he just didn't have that good, seasoned Tour of Switzerland, mileage on his legs and experience on his legs. And that makes a difference. It makes a huge, huge difference. So here we are. Second rest day is by. We got this time trial. And they're off and running. And who, of course, is sitting in the leader box in the time trial for the Tour de France, but Wout van Aert. So Wout van Aert is now owning the lead of the time trial. And Pogačar and Vingegaard are out on course. And it is the battle. Is the big battle. It's the number one and the number two, and they're going hard and they're going strong. And it's Pogačar rode a good time trial, but not a great time trial. He didn't really have a really good time trial. So it looked like van Aert owned that time trial until his teammate came along and blew it away by a minute and 36 seconds. Yeah, a minute and 36 seconds. Now, I'm not going to assume anything or draw any conclusions at all, but how in the world, this is my question, it is my question, and it's a lot of people's questions as far as this goes. How do you put a minute and 38 seconds on the winning time trial time in 13 miles? That's a lot of time. It's a lot of time. Vingegaard had the time trial of his life, and he had made a statement. I read it on the show last week. He'd made a statement that the Tour de France was not going to be won by seconds. It was going to be won by minutes, and he wasn't wrong because he put 1:38 on Wout van Aert. Wout van Aert had, 20 seconds or so on Pogačar, and so all of a sudden it's a minute and 48 seconds ahead of the second place rider. That's a big deal. Next day, mountain stage. Nasty mountain stage. I talked about it on last week's show. It had just lots of just nasty climbs on it. Really steep. beyond categories, category ones, you know, really, really steep stuff. A lot of over 10%, over double digit type climbing. It was all in there. It was action packed and it was full. And when it came to the end, it was Vingegaard. It was the Vingegaard show. He just, Jonas put on a show. He put on an incredible show. And all of a sudden, there is a 6-minute difference in the Tour de France. And it turned into even, well, that might have been 7 at that point. It turned into a lot. I have the results here, and we'll talk about that. But he just blew the lid off of everything in 2 days. In 2 days, he just completely transformed the Tour de France. And pretty much made it impossible for anyone to catch him. And it was just a phenomenal amount of effort. He looked good on his bike. He looked clean. Back to the time trial. And I talked about body language, and I talked about the body language of Pogačar and how he was kind of sitting up and he wasn't really down here. Vingegaard, he looked like he spent a lot of time in a wind tunnel learning the position, because he was beautiful on that bike. He did not move from that bike. He didn't change bikes when they got to the hill at the end. I don't think Pogačar did either, as I remember. Not a lot of riders chose to ride the TT bike up the hill, but he just stayed down in the aero position. He never moved. Never moved. That's a lot of discipline. That's a lot of core strength. That's a lot of training to be able to hold that and keep it there. Fabian Cancellara years ago used to, he owned the world championship, time trial champion. And he was just pretty to watch on the bike. He wasn't just on the machine. He was the machine. He just, it just clicked. Everything clicked together. He looked perfect. And he spent countless hours in the wind tunnel learning how to do that, to make sure that he wouldn't change the position. Because, you know, once you get over 18 miles an hour, it's all about your position on the bike. That's all there is to it. That's a lesson to be learned by anyone who rides a bike, whether you're an amateur who just likes to ride on group rides and go fast or not. It's about the position, man. At certain speeds, it becomes very, very strong with the position. So anyway, again, mountain stage, crushed it, just crushed it. Did, you know, the Jumbo Visma team was brilliant. They ran really smart, strong races, and that was it. They owned the Tour de France. After that, that was it. That was the moment. Now comes the fun stuff, and we're not done yet. We're not done yet. We've got 2 flat stages after that that are sprint stages, and they were won by breakaways. That doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it's really exciting. It gets me real excited because, you know, I in my racing days, though they were not very, very long, I did play around on my bicycle for a while racing my bike. I had absolutely, positively no sprint whatsoever. I'm a little guy. I don't generate a lot of wattage. And I would watch those guys just wind up and leave me behind at the finish line if we were doing a crit. Because I just didn't have that ability. I mean, I could sit on their wheel, but I couldn't even stay on their wheel. They'd ride me off their wheel. They were so strong. And so my game was, I was a road rider. I liked racing on the road. And those guys that like to sprint don't like racing on the road so much. Those guys that like to race on the road don't like doing crits so much. But, you know, sometimes you get a good all-rounder and they can do everything. But anyway, so I would get together before the race. I'd go find other guys that I knew that were strong like I was in the hills. And I'd say, so here's my plan. Lap 7. Are you with me? And they go, well, yeah, you're gonna. What are you gonna do on lap 7? I said, I'm gonna fly out from the back. I'm gonna go all the way to the back. I'm gonna fly on the outside, and I'm gonna go as hard as I can. And I need help. I can't do it alone because I just don't have that much horsepower. So, are you in? And they'd go, yeah, we're in. We'll give it a try, Ron. Yeah, sure, why not? Let's give it a try. And so I would commandeer these little breakaways. And, you know, you'd get away. You'd maybe last a lap. Maybe you'd last a couple laps. And then you get sucked back in. And so I basically, you know, you got lap cards when you're going by, seeing how many more laps you got to go, and you know where you're at. And I'd say, okay, I'm going on 7, and then I'm going to go again on lap 12. Okay, if we get caught, we're going again on lap 12. That's what we're going to do. And if somebody else goes and they get sucked back in, we have to go as soon as they get sucked back in. And, you know, I had my handful of climbing guys, and they go, all right, whatever you say, Ron, whatever you say. You know why they said that? Because occasionally it works. And then occasionally when it works, you get the reputation, and then the Peloton does not want to let you do that ever again because they don't get to do the big sprint at the end. But sometimes it works. So it's always worth taking a chance. It's always worth, putting something like that together. One key part of that is the breakaway has to be very machine-like. Everybody's got to take an equal pull. You gotta work together. If you don't work together, you get some clown in your break that just wants to sit in and hold on tight the whole way, it won't work. And you either have to eliminate him, let's say insult him off your break or whatever you have to do, or you got to figure out a way to deal with this guy because he's not going to help. If he's not going to help, you don't want him there. He's just causing you problems and he's just slowing you down. So everybody's got to work at an equal amount. And then again, back to the equal amount, that means no hard pulls. Everybody takes a pull, but you don't take such a hard pull that you leave everybody else behind, because then that doesn't work. So it takes a special group to be able to pull it off. It really does. And that's the key right there, is you gotta be able to work together. It's team sport until it's not. That's cycling. That's what it is. It's a chess game on wheels. It's really, really a lot of fun. So anyway, what do we got? We got 2 days that we had potential sprint, you know, big sprinter wins at the end. And we had breaks that successfully stayed off the front. And the second time it happened, it was the same guy that had won the stage the day before, who is out there with another group of people. And he's out there with another crew, and they're going for it. And you would have thought they would have learned the first time. And, you know, he was unfortunately out of gas when it came to, you know, the final sprint. So he didn't win the second day. But It was just fun to watch, because they were inches from getting caught on the second one. It was really kind of cool. And that's bike racing. That's why I love bike racing so much, because, you know, anybody can win. Anybody can win. Anybody who's smart can win. And sometimes you just get lucky. So anyway, cool stuff. Very, very cool. So what's the final result? The final result is Jonas Vingegaard, Jumbo Visma, 82 hours, 5 minutes and 42 seconds, 7 minutes and 29 seconds ahead of Tadej Pogačar from UAE Team Emirates. UAE Team Emirates did a really good job, because Adam Yates was third, but he was 10 minutes and 56 seconds behind Jonas. And then Simon Yates, his twin brother, who rides for a completely different team, was fourth overall, 12 minutes and 23 seconds back from the winner of the tour this year. So the Yates brothers are a little bit of something to watch. We got a little show earlier in the tour this year with them where they broke away together. That was kind of cool. Totally different teams, but they're twin brothers. That nobody knows your brother better than a twin. I mean, they can communicate without talking, and they rode together really strong and nice. It's just that Adam is the stronger of the two, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe next year it'll be Simon. We'll see. But anyway, the Yates brothers got third and fourth in the tour. Boy, Mama Yates must be a happy mom. That's pretty cool. And Carlos Rodriguez, who is just was a fighter the whole way. Very, very impressive tour. He rides for Ineos Grenadiers, and he was 13 minutes and 17 seconds behind. What a great Tour de France. Unbelievable. Now, let's add a little drama in at the end. A little bit of drama. So, Wout van Aert, right? He was like almost going to win the time trial. He was going to almost win how many stages this year? How many stages was Wout second in this year? A lot. He had a tough tour. But, you know, he had other things on his mind because, you know, his wife, Sarah, was at home very pregnant and pregnant with their second child. And Wout announced after the time trial, it was after the mountain stage, the day after the time trial. He said, in consultation with the team, we have decided that my place is now at home, he said, adding that the team's doctor had informed him his wife was expecting to go into labor soon. I always thought I would go home when my wife indicated that she needed me. That time has come, Van Aert's wife, Sarah Debe, who married Wout in 2018. They now have two sons born in 2021 and 2023. Whew, talk about brothers racing bikes in a few years. Woohoo! Van Aert withdrew from the 2023 Tour de France before stage 18 to return home for the birth of their second son. Their second child, Jerome, was born shortly after Van Aert left the race. And I mean shortly after. He left that day. That baby was born the next day. She was probably in labor when he left. So anyway, now there are two little Wouts, and we'll see what happens, because, you know, sometimes your kids follow in your footsteps and off you go, and you get to see the next generation of success. Sometimes they go in a completely opposite direction. Who would have thought? Who would know? Anyway, you know, my son doesn't ride a bike. What can I say? It happens. So anyway, but I am really, really looking forward to, we got to fast forward 20 years. We could see something. We'll see what happens. Well, you know, who knows if he wants to get them involved in cycling or not? That's another question. When Greg LeMond was asked years ago, he said, and Greg LeMond had his little boy up on his arm and on his shoulder on the podium at the Tour de France, a reporter came up to him and said, "So, Greg, are you going to get your son racing bicycles?" And Greg looked at him and smiled. And this might have been, that might have been 89, the year that my son was born. And he smiled and he said, "I'm going to teach him how to golf." So, you know, obviously, two things about that. First of all, no offense to anyone who plays golf professionally and is making a good living doing it. Good for you. Wish I could, but I can't. So, and on top of that, you know, they obviously, golf is not quite the cardiovascular sport that cycling is. And Greg had been through a lot and crashed a lot and also got shot by his uncle on a hunting accident. I mean, there's just so many stories about Greg LeMond. He was a phenomenal athlete, but, you know, he had his rocky roads along the way, not to mention his battle with Eno and all that other fun stuff from years past. Anyway, the other thing is that they weren't really paying cyclists what they're paying now back then. So anyway, made me think about the Czarnecki brothers. Yeah, Joel. Yeah, I remember the Czarnecki brothers. You know, I have you're gonna appreciate this. One of those Czarnecki brothers ended up getting into the bike industry, and he was working for different bike companies, kind of like what I was doing. And he was selling a brand of bicycles known as Batavus, a Dutch brand of bike. And I'm pretty sure it was Matt. That I bought the bike from. But anyway, I had my shop at the time, and I bought a Batavus cyclocross bike because, well, cross bikes were hard to find. Full Reynolds 531 tubing. It was actually 531C tubing on a couple of the tubes, which is the tandem tubing, so super heavy duty. Also super heavy, but didn't matter. You know, it was cross bike, and it rides like a cross bike, and it's really fun to ride. And I know that because years down the road, when it was hanging in my garage, and I'm looking at it and going, I should really do something with that bike. And I have another steel bike. I have a Ritchie Swiss cross bike, which I like a lot, and it's way lighter. And I looked at it and went, wow, it's got horizontal dropouts on it. That's interesting. I could make this into a single speed. So I did. So I've got this great single speed bike. It is, it's got a flip-flop wheel. It's cassette on one side and it's fixie on the other side. Although I have not yet ridden it as a fixie, but I'm toying with the idea now. I got it from one of the Zarnecki brothers. So that those names pop up over the years. Thanks for listening, Joel. Nice to see you out there. Hope you're having a good summer on your bike. Joel had a great little bike shop called Cycles La Chance down in New Haven. And he was known from a particular sales rep that used to go to both of our stores, Mr. Ed Campbell. Joel's going to get a kick out of that. Ed came into my store one day and said, you'll never guess what Joel did down at Cycles of Chance. And I said, what did he do? And he said, you know, those really, the REG used to make a water bottle that was, they made a lot of water bottles, but they made one particular one that was clear. I mean, clear like, you know, like a glass of water, clear. And you could see right through. It was really great. You just couldn't drop them because if you dropped it on the floor, it literally exploded like glass. Even though it was plastic, it was just like, it was a weird plastic. Well, Joel put a goldfish in it and put it in the front window. And that was that. So Joel wins many points for being very, very clever. Well-fed Ed. Yes, well-fed Ed. Ed was a large man with a Dutch boy haircut? I don't know. What was that haircut, Joel? What was that? It was very, very unusual. He was an unusual looking man. Anyway, and a large man. And I hope he's still around because he was certainly one of the most entertaining reps I had that walked through my door. And he actually helped me start my store because when we made the decision to open a store back in 1978, yeah, way back then, I called Ed and said, hey, Ed, we're opening a store. What do you think? He goes, I'll be there. He said, let me help you get through this. And he was good. He was very good. He knew what to buy, what not to buy. He knew how to get us started. He was very enthusiastic. He thought that we were really, you know, we really had our finger on the pulse as far as being in the bike industry. And the rest is history. So, my partner stayed with me for 3 years and then he left and then it was all my store and off we went. And I was in business with that for 15 years. So kind of fun. I think he went west and south. Yeah, somebody told me maybe New Mexico or Arizona. That's what I had heard. So yeah, anyway, well-fed Ed. Also, Communist Party Ed the Red. That was the other thing I knew him as. Very funny. So, anyway. That's what we got. We're going to move on here. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the, as Fran likes to call it, the Tour de Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Tour de Femme. So, really cool thing that they're doing now. And what they're doing is we're going to get this one to go away. Running the Women's Tour de France, the day, starting day is the Champs-Élysées day. So the basically what happens is I believe that the women's race is just before the men come into Paris. Is that correct, Fran? I think that's right.
I think so.
Because you got a big crowd, okay, lots of excitement. People are there to watch bike racing. And of course, you know, bike racing goes by you and then it's gone. But when you go into the Champs-Élysées, they go around and around and around after they come through the Arc de Triomphe. And, you know, they're on the cobbles and it's just very exciting. And, you know, people are 12, 15 deep on the side of the road screaming and yelling. And it's very exciting. And it's the finish of the Tour de France. So they've got the crowd. So why not start the women's tour that day? And that's what they did. They started the women's tour. So we got the women's Tour de France going on right now. And it was Annemiek van Vleuten, right? On the finishing sprint, Fran? Are you
I
with me?
Lottie Kopecky.
Oh, Lottie Kopecky. You're right. Lottie Kopecky took the stage. She is the number five rider in the world as far as women riders go. Demi Vollering is number one. Annemiek van Vleuten is number two. Lorena Wiebes is number three. And yeah, Lottie is number four. So anyway, very exciting. Fran got to see it. I think I was doing something. What was I doing? I don't know. I was out riding my bike.
It was the day before.
It was Saturday or Sunday. Champs-Élysées was on Sunday.
It was yesterday.
I was out sagging the Thread City ride. Right. So anyway, I missed it, but Fran saw it, and I guess it was very exciting and very cool. And then the men came in, and they did their dance for the big sprints at the end. So anyway, great day, great way to start it. And now they've got 7 more days, I believe, of women's Tour de France. I believe it's an 8-day race, and it's on, you know, TV. I believe NBC is Peacock.
NBC and Peacock.
And Peacock are broadcasting it right now. So right here
on
stateside. But it's on GCN also.
And bikes.
And I'm sure if you're in Europe, you can watch it anywhere you want because bike racing is king. Eurosport. Yep. Yeah, I'm sure. So anyway, that's what's going on. That's a really cool thing. And we're going to run out of time here. And that's never good. But that's okay. So I wanted to bring up this little thing here. Are drivers getting worse? That's a really, really good question. I'm starting to feel and I get more and more complaints about drivers of motorized vehicles. And so I found this neat little site called The Zebra. And all the safety features in the world can't save us from ourselves. That's what this article says. Every day, millions of Americans get behind the wheel of a 4,000-pound machine, or less, I like to call it, weapon. A machine that is responsible for the deaths of 38,000 people a year. That's why I call it a weapon. Any guesses what it is? It's your car. Your car is as safe as it's ever been. Every vehicle on the road is a miracle in ultra-high strength materials, impressive computing power, working together to protect you like a cocoon as you drive. Yet more people are dying driving cars. What's going on? Why are the traffic deaths surging? According to data from the National Highway Administration, vehicle deaths rose 17% from the summer of 2019 until 2021. That was the largest two-year increase since the 1940s. Remember the 1940s? I don't, but I do know that seatbelts weren't an option. Anyway. The answer isn't engineering. It's we got all this tech going on inside of our cars, and we got all sorts of things going on that can distract us. And it's the distracted driving is completely out of control. Traffic deaths have been climbing since the 60s, but then they saw this big significant increase. Despite a decrease in total miles logged during COVID-19, the decline in driving was actually accompanied by an increase in aggressive driving. Yeah, aggressive driving is what's going on. These people that scream at you to get off the road when you're riding your bike for no apparent reason, that's bad news, man. That's really bad news, folks. People are driving really aggressively, and this article here, this website, the Zebra, released a study on road rage that found that aggressive driving is becoming both more commonplace and more dangerous. The survey found that 8 out of 10 drivers admitted to aggressive driving, and 90% of people had witnessed it. The consequences of anger on the road can be deadly. According to the National Highway Safety Traffic Safety Association, the number of road rage related fatal crashes rose almost 500% in 10 years. How about that? That's a big thing. And then, of course, we have the distracted driving thing, which is your stupid phone in your car, which talks to everything. And now it talks to your car, and now your car talks to you. And now the thing that I have been complaining about for over 3 years now, and I, as a matter of fact, I was really on a rant on it for a long time, and I haven't really played with that, and I might have to play with that in another week or so. So you're driving down the road, right? You got your hands on the steering wheel of your car, driving down the road. I'm simulating driving down the road. For anybody who's not seeing this on video, I've got my hands up and I'm simulating this. And you're driving down the road, and what are you supposed to be doing? Well, you're driving your car, so you're supposed to be looking straight ahead, right? You're supposed to be looking over the steering wheel, through the windshield, and you're looking to the left, and you're looking to the right, and you're looking forward. Maybe you're glancing occasionally in your rearview mirror. And that's called driving a car. Okay, that's what you're doing, right? Right. So the wisdom and engineering of the automobile world has taken all your information now, including your cell phone, because people were just looking back and down at their cell phones. So then the car manufacturer said, well, we got to make this safer. So we're going to utilize it so that the cell phone can now talk to the car and we can put it on a screen. Where do they put the screen? Over here. Okay, I just turned hard to my right to look at the center of my dashboard, which is not looking at where I'm going. Hello, automobiles. Figure it out. Car industry, don't put it there. That's a bad idea. That's where mine is in my car. I know everybody's got that. It's where the radio was. Remember, people used to get in accidents because they were fiddling with their radio. Guess what? It's not the right place to put it. That's all there is to it. Should be in front of you so that, like, you glance up to your rearview mirror, you can glance down and see whatever you need to see, but you're still got your straight ahead line of sight. That's it. I've said it. I'll move on. Maybe I'll pick it up again next week, because we are certainly running out of time, and it's getting to be time to go on to events and talk a little bit more about that. Next week, we'll also talk a little more about the Tour de Girl, as Fran likes to call it. But right now, it's ongoing, the bicycle game on the early history of bicycles in Hartford, Connecticut at the Hartford Historical Society at 1 Elizabeth Street, still going. August 19th, the 32nd annual Steeplechase Bike Tour. If you guys came down and checked out the Thread City Cyclers big ride yesterday, got lots of those roads out here. Boy, it's quiet. It's nice. They're beautiful roads. We don't have a lot of traffic, so we don't have a lot of those distracted motorized vehicles. If they are distracted and they're on a back road that we have our rides on, they crash into trees and stone walls instead of us. Yay! Like that. That's a good thing. Remember, Mr. and Mrs. Oak are your best friends. So, this year the Steeplechase is also featuring an 18-mile gravel ride for all you new gravel enthusiasts. The 78th edition of the Vuelta a España takes place in Barcelona on August 26, 2023, and that will begin with a 14-kilometer team time trial. Woohoo! That'll be exciting and interesting. Made, that's www.made.bike, a new industry and consumer bike event highlighting the craft of handmade bicycles, will be in Portland, Oregon at the Rose Quarter on August 24th. Yeah. Saturday, September 30th, Charter Oak Park in Manchester, the Rotary in Motion is happening. That's a free event, and you can find out more at manchesterrotary.org. Lots of cool stuff, cycling stuff, a lot of fun. Explore the rail trails and bike trails. Very, very cool. Finishing points. Hey, have you not watched that new Netflix trailer yet, Unchained? get it together and do it. It's worth it. It's so much fun. It's great. Hey, the Tour de France is over, but we got the Tour de Femme. We're still watching bike racing. Yeah, I'm still excited about it. Are you ready to become a bicycle advocate? Don't forget about the bike game at Connecticut Historical Society in Hartford. I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and lack of places to ride safely, and join that revolution of change. You might just surprise yourself. Also, ride your bike one day instead of driving your car. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening.